Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
We have reduced intelligence to only the rational intelligence. And we have forgotten that aside from the rational intelligence that we need to interact with the modern world, we have to develop, because we have them, other intelligences. We have the ecological intelligence that makes us aware of our surroundings. We have the emotional intelligence that actually allows us to love and to respect. And we have the spiritual intelligence that allows us to embrace creation and the creator.
That's the voice of professor and activist Dr. Marcelo Saavedra. On this week's show, we speak to Dr. Saavedra on the first of a three-part series on the wisdom of the elders, so stay tuned.
You are listening to Latin Waves. We are very privileged this morning to be joined by Dr. Marcelo Saavedra. He is an Aymara elder and a professor at the University of Ottawa in Indigenous Studies. Thank you so much for being with us, Marcelo.
It is my joy to be talking to you, Sylvia.
We live in a world that has lost a sense of the sacred, a sense of what matters most. You know, we are riddled with rituals daily of going to work, you know, getting in our cars. And most people go through life almost as if going, you know, being asleep on a daily basis. But for many indigenous cultures, there's a sacredness to life. And in some cultures, there are rituals, practices that brings us to the awareness, to the intention, to the collective responsibility and attention to the sacred. How do we invite the sacred into our everyday lives?
Actually, it's a very simple process. So simple that actually it seems to be something impossible to do, because we have been educated to believe that only what is complicated is true and is valid knowledge. Whatever the simple things that we can do, that we do, it just, as you mentioned, is the intention that we put into these actions that converts them into sacred things. As you said, like we have our own routines in modern life, you know, we all commute, we all go to work, we take a shower, we eat, and so on. So there is like a cycle that we go about, and that is inscribed within a bigger cycle, which is the week, which is again inscribed in a bigger circle, yes, in a bigger cycle, which is the month, and so on. But we fail to see that these things, although very simple, they're quite sacred. You know, and because we have lost that sense of sacrality to them. All the things we do, they are profane. And we were warned by our ancestors, by our elders, that we were going to leave behind a life which was dictated by the sacredness of everything and by place. You know, actually, my ancestor said, we're going to leave behind our sacred places, and we are going to allow profane time to come in place of that. And that has happened. Nowadays, we measure everything with this thing we call time, but we don't even know what time is. But, you know, because there are so many different perceptions about time. And in the modern world, there's not even a single working definition of what time is, but yet we live stressed by it all the time. It's the profanity of time that has permeated everything we do, everything we are. So we are living an age of profanity, and we have chosen to forget the sacredness of everything, because we are sacred entities. Just think about yourself. You know, it took this universe 14.5 or 6 billion years to come to this point of being you. So every single being is a sacred thing, because that being, be it a human, be it a mountain, be it a little insect, a bacteria, or whatever, it's a sacred thing. It summarizes all the sacred elements, all four sacred elements. It synthesizes all sacred directions, because it occupies a place in space that implies the four directions. And as humans, each of us implies the four sacred races, the mix between the black race with the white race and the yellow race and the red race, makes all that rainbow of humanity that we have become. And that's something quite sacred. You know, we have never been like this. We are building bridges to reach out others, and we are becoming more aware of how diverse we are. So that's a beautiful thing that is happening to us. But we have to do something to keep that from disappearing, from going extinct, because that's also the huge risk we are facing nowadays.
One of the things that I was, I guess, most amazed by and humble at the same time is when we first met, you said something to me about how things happen in life, but we always have the ability to respond, how the only choice we always have is how we respond. And as I look at life and I think about this cycle and circle of life that you're describing, of four directions, of the different stages of our life, in a Western culture, we are told that, you know, you are born, you're a child, then you reach a certain age and you're in the middle crisis. And it's like this expected death, you know, that happens. But I wonder if we could talk a little bit about the sacredness of life and the way that this rhythmic, symbiotic dance of co-creation between us and the earth that creates us generates not just a rhythm, a sacred rhythm of living, but also how we, through intention and attention, are able to position ourselves and know, situate ourselves is a better word, of where we are and who we are in this moment.
One of the key elements in being is that we have to understand that the only real moment is the now. The past is something that has passed. It's gone, and there's nothing we can do to change it. And the future is just a set of probabilities. It doesn't really exist. The only thing that we have is the now. It's here and now. That's when actions take place. It's always in the now. You will never take an action tomorrow, and you will never be able to take an action in the past. You can only take actions now. So when you talk about intention and attention, I think a huge awareness is to acknowledge that that's what we have, is the now. And we have to be able to cultivate that now, to live well in the now, and to pay respect to that now, because that's the only thing we have. It's the only time the only moment in which we can really be, and our sacredness expresses itself in that now. In order to plot the land, we had to develop this sense of time. So we had to imagine what tomorrow was going to look like, domesticate the land. But in order to domesticate the land, we had to bring about a biological cleansing of the land down to the bacterial level. You know, if you need to use a piece of land, you need to get rid of all the sentient beings that are part of that piece of land. You have to clean it out, and then you domesticate it, and you start to grow things that are going to be basically be used by humans. We forget about other nations, you know. It's at that point that the notion of past and future came about, and we forgot to live in the now, and we started to live for tomorrow. And since then, all our present has been contaminated by this sense of tomorrow that is quite deceiving, because it's not really there. What is there now is the now. That's about it. At that moment, you have to respond to wherever your needs are, and that's why in indigenous mature cultures, we talk about responsibilities, because that's the ability to respond. And this notion comes basically from grandmothers and from mothers, because they have to respond. They have to have the ability to respond to the needs of newborns. So they have responsibility. And then the whole species, they have a responsibility. And we have lived with a sense of responsibility for thousands of years until the advent of the state, of the national state. With the coming of the national state, they came to the notion of rights. Rights and the state, they come like holding hands. But in the indigenous world, there's not the notion of rights. There is rather the notion of responsibility. I did a research with a colleague of mine, as he wrote a book about the tyranny of rights. And our research showed us that in indigenous languages, there's not, in any indigenous language, we found a notion or a word for right. What we found, like everywhere, was a notion of responsibility, some notions of integrity. We have to shift our lives, because nowadays we, you know, all of us, we live according to the rights, supposed to be our rights that are enshrined in many legal documents, like the United Nations Declaration of Human, Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and the notion of rights also enshrined in many national constitutions. But I think we have to move beyond that, and we have to start living in a world that is going to be moved by the notion of responsibility, because we are responsible for the well-being of this planet, therefore for the well-being for the ones to come. And that has to move us.
You know, when I think about what it means to be alive, to, you know, this essence of beingness, I cannot help but to experience both the fear and longing of remembering, you know, because in so many ways we are taught to forget from a very early age who we are. You know, as children, yeah, we don't need to be told, we just are, and we experience the world with awe, with curiosity, with a sense of amazement, you know, at the miracle and mystery of life. And so as we get educated into seeing the world through our heads, through our minds, as you know, this ability to think we are our heads, you know, and that our body is just something that we carry around, we become alienated. So can we talk a little bit about, you know, the pain, not just the pain, but also the dis-ease, you know, this an inability to be at ease with the world, with creation, with others, when we are in alienation?
The Western mentality implies that in order to make sense of reality, of our environment, we have to dissect things, we had to disassociate things, and we had to become separated from our environment. And that happened, you know, that nature, we call it the wild, you know, it's something in where we think that we won't be able to survive. But we come from there. We still carry the original instructions that were imprinted to us by our Creator. We still have them. But as you said, we chose to forget. And this civilization, the industrial civilization, has forced us to forget. So we have forgotten that we are related to each other. And not only as humans, but only also to the trees, to the plants, to the air, to the water. We are those things, you know. Like, for instance, this modern world has been crafted by the thought processes of many economists, you know, like Adam Smith, John Locke, David Ricardo, Milton Friedman, and so on, you know. And actually, the economics, they managed to create a term that is quite telling, referring to Mother Earth. They call our surroundings, our environment, in economics, it's called an externality. It is as if it is something external to us. It is not within us. And that's false. You know, we are still the four sacred elements. We will always be the four sacred elements. That's our real nature. And when we'll die, we'll go back to Mother Earth, converted into those four sacred elements. So we need to move beyond this paradigm of forgetfulness. And we have to acknowledge that many cultures that are still alive today, they have been on the land for thousands of years, thousands and thousands. And these are what I call mature cultures. And they have a lot to teach to us. For instance, in my home country, Bolivia, we are nowadays trying to move beyond the colonial national state. It's a very challenging ordeal that we have in front of us. It's so hard to move away from this straitjacket that is the colonial state. But anyways, we are trying to some inroads into these memories that we have from our ancestors. And we are using also some avant-garde sciences like systems thinking, quantum physics. We're using resilience approaches. And we are trying to compose a symphonic arrangement of living and coexisting well. Actually, in resilience theory, they have made many inroads into this, but they have failed to acknowledge the spiritual part. So they still need to include this very important component into the equation. And then this is going to become a quantum concept by which we'll be able to maybe preserve this civilization, not as it is. It has to change, that's for sure. But we should attempt to prevent its demise, because by the way things are going now, we have reached like the peak oil event in many oil producing countries. We are attaining the peak event for many other what we call natural resources. And at the same time, as we are over exploiting what we call the resources of Mother Earth, we are producing vast quantities of industrial waste. You know that there is more plastic in the ocean than phytoplankton. There are islands in the global ocean that are made out of just plastic. And this plastic, it decomposes, it's smaller component, and it's polluting the fish, and we are eating the fish. And actually, the overfishing also has led to the emptying of the oceans. So in the very short term, in the next 10 or 20 years, we'll have a huge collapse of the world fishery, because we're emptying the oceans. And we're doing that with many other things. So it is urgent that we change the way we see things, the way we believe in things, and the values by which we are alive in this planet. We need to change that. It's urgent.
I think of the secrets, you know, that are kept within our heart. And I think in this season of forgetfulness of capitalism and the ways that it makes us forgetful and forget, continuously forgetting who we are, it's really hard to fly when we're digesting clocks and being digested by the clock, you know, the clock of production, the clocks of, you know, continuous consumption. How do we return to the heart? What are the wisdoms of our elders, of our ancestors, that can bring us back to the path, the sacred path of attention, intention, and awe to the mystery of life?
Yeah, that's a very important question, Sylvia. And actually, that reminds me of a time when I met with several elders from Turtle Island, from many nations on Turtle Island, and we were discussing about what is going to trigger our awareness so we can become well-rounded, good ancestors. And what we came with is that we are intelligent beings, but unfortunately, because we have forgotten things, we have forgotten that, or rather, we have reduced intelligence to only the rational intelligence. And we have forgotten that aside from the rational intelligence that we need to interact with the modern world, we have to develop, because we have them, other intelligences. We have the ecological intelligence that makes us aware of our surroundings. We have the emotional intelligence that actually allows us to love and to respect. And we have the spiritual intelligence that allows us to embrace creation and the creator. And of course, we have the rational intelligence that allows us to understand this plane of existence. But we have to nurture these four intelligences, and in that way, we'll be able to be alive well. Like in Algonquian, they call this Mino Bimadisuen, which means being alive well. In Cree, they call it Miupinitsi, which calls being alive well as well. In my own language, Aymara, we say that Suma Kamanya, which means live and coexist well. In Utetut, they say Kajarnik, which basically can be translated into being at peace with your surroundings and being in good spirit to reflect upon it, which is another longer way of saying being alive well. So all these mature cultures, they have crafted over the years, over thousands of years, a way to say that they are in harmony and in equilibrium with our mother, our ultimate mother. And at the end of the day, it's all about living and coexisting well. Capitalism has made us believe that it's all about living better, but it's not about living better. That's competition. It's all about living and coexisting well. You just need to take a certain amount of blessings, because that's the way we refer to the to what usually we call resources. We don't use the term resources. We call them blessings or gifts. And we should be in harmony and in equilibrium with our mother. And that's going to result in us being able to live on this planet and live a good planet for our children.
You've been listening to an interview with Dr. Marcelo Saavedra. Stay tuned next week for part two of a three-part series. Bye for now. We've come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is an internationally syndicated weekly program made available through campus and community stations and available out to the world at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Visit Latin Waves Media to hear previous shows, to access resources, or support our efforts towards social change via community project engagement. Thank you, and bye for now.